You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Hollywood 2026 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This issue serves as a combined December 2025 issue and January 2026 issue. This is Vanity Fair Part A. And there are three separate covers for this issue. Now here's the editor's letter from Mark Guiducci, with photographs by Theo Winner. So, why men? Together, the actors on these three covers of Vanity Fair's 32nd annual Hollywood issue illustrate something different. These are not the matinee idols of early cinema, sprung, fully formed, names staged and hair dyed from the head of some Zeusian studio chief. Nor do they present as puffed-up superheroes, even if occasionally they play them on screen. Our new leading men are something much more radical, mere mortals, often kind, sometimes vulnerable, each extraordinary. Never before has a generation of actors been less performative and more human. Have you ever wondered what an internet boyfriend becomes when he grows up? A movie star, it turns out. They are good guys rather than strong men or bad boys, and we love them for it. Novelist Otessa Moshfe explores this phenomenon in her cover story, The People's Princes, while Theo Winner and Tom Guinness capture our new Hollywood royalty as if they were making old Hollywood movies. For Theo's camera, they performed a shipwreck on location in Malibu with Poncho and Howard, their parrot co-stars. They blocked scenes on a studio lot, surrounded by cowboys and astronauts. They ran lines in black tie. Inside, the issue features dozens of other players navigating Hollywood as its tectonic plates shift underfoot. In Michelle Ruiz's profile of Chloe Zhao, the Hamnet director opens up about how her neurodivergence contributes to her singular method of filmmaking. In The Elephant in the Room, Tom Doughton takes the pulse of a town that is obsessed with AI, its promise of devastation, its promise of salvation. It has become popular to talk about Hollywood in decline, scorched by streaming wars, strikes, and actual fire. But it is much more interesting to talk about Hollywood, a town, an industry, a great American idea, on the cusp of a great evolutionary leap. Anchoring the issue is 37 Hours in Hollywood, a narrative portfolio featuring nearly that many characters, told by playwright Jeremy O. Harris. Hollywood is in Los Angeles, of course, where the story opens on assistants picking up their boss's Erewhon smoothies. Hollywood is also in Paris, where Ayo Edebiri is en route to the Chanel show. Hollywood is in Nashville, where Somber is on tour. Yes, music is Hollywood, too. Hollywood is in London, where F1 luminary and film producer Lewis Hamilton is getting his hair braided. And Hollywood is in New York, which is perhaps why our local paper, the New York Post, makes at least 26 appearances in this issue, ostensibly about California. As Vanity Fair West Coast editor Olivia Nuzzi writes about Hollywood, the paradox is that the place in America where people migrate when they wish to become known is, in fact, an ideal place to disappear. She knows firsthand. A political reporter who was 21 years old when she first interviewed Donald Trump, Olivia exiled herself to Malibu last year after a national scandal detonated, leaving no part of her life spared from the blast. Olivia's first book, American Canto, is as much a work of poetry as it is boldly contemporary nonfiction. A reckoning that stares down the nation's soul as well as her own. She shares the exclusive excerpt with us. "This is not my first Hollywood issue. That one was 15 years ago, and I was writing captions as an assistant. But it is my first as editor, and the first of the magazine's next chapter. With it arrives a new logo, inspired by our 2000s-era design, itself based on the deco typefaces of Jazz Age Vanity Fair. We are drawing from the best parts of the past as we reckon with the present and leap into the future." Here are some of the contributors to the issue. Otessa Moshfegh, The People's Princess, the award-winning writer behind Eileen, My Year of Rest and Relaxation, Homesick for Another World, Death in Her Hands, Lapvona, and McGlue, has written extensively about women. "Working on this piece for the Hollywood issue, I realized that I don't think about men very often. This man or that man, sure, but rarely the collective," she says. "To generalize about any group of people feels dangerous. Writing about these actors was an extravagant experience in that way." Theo Winner, The Hollywood Issue. For Winner's first Vanity Fair cover, he traveled to Malibu and London, from sandy beaches to slick stages, to photograph 12 leading men. "I thought it would be more difficult shooting all these great actors together in the same room as opposed to on their own. big personalities in a small space, says the New York-based photographer. But in fact, it was much easier. No one wanted to be the person slacking amongst such great company. Micaiah Carter, 37 hours in Hollywood. Carter, an L.A.-based photographer and director, known for his use of cinematic lighting, says composing one single image for each subject was such a rewarding challenge. It meant a lot to capture family like Law Roach, collaborate with new friends I'd been wanting to work with like Paris Gebel, and create something completely new for me with Gustavo Dudamel, he says. Each scene felt like its own world, pure fun to build out. Tom Guinness, The Hollywood Issue. Guinness, who styled the cover, says he found inspiration in the locations. We were especially fortunate to get access to Ealing Studios, the legendary British studio facility, which allowed us to place together today's biggest movie stars in an historical context, he says. That sense of spanning time informed the entire mood of the shoot, from the photography to the styling. Paul Goldberger, Mid-Century Maison. Nicolas Ghesquiere has an infectious warmth and curiosity. He really is interested in everything, which is not true of most people in the fashion world, says Goldberger, a Pulitzer Prize-winning architecture critic, author, and Vanity Fair contributing editor who interviewed the fashion designer at his Hollywood home. It was fun discovering how many things we both like: Los Angeles, mid-century architecture, film, and of course John Lautner, he says. Derek C. Blasberg, Confessions on a Dance Floor. Vanity Fair special correspondent Blasberg revisited what he calls the hedonistic Hollywood nights of the noughties to compile an oral history of early aughts nightlife in Los Angeles, with interviews from Brent Bolthouse, Lisa Love, Carlos Lopez, and Rachel Zoe. While the era is long gone, eroded by camera phones and social media, it still sparkles in my mind like a digital camera flash on MAC lip gloss, he says. Jeremy O. Harris, 37 Hours in Hollywood. Harris is a writer, playwright, and producer. His Slave Play earned 12 Tony Award nominations. His previous works include Daddy, a Melodrama, Water Sports, or Insignificant White Boys, Black Exhibition, and Yell, a documentary of my time here. This year, he became the creative director of the Williamstown Theater Festival's Creative Collective. Harris holds a Master of Fine Arts in Playwriting from the Yale School of Drama. Isabel Brouwerman, World on Fire. Artist Isabel Brouwerman first met Olivia Nuzzi while both were covering, in their respective mediums, Donald Trump's civil fraud trial. A collaborative friendship was born, yielding an interview with the president. We both needed to see the ear, says Brouwerman, and eventually, How to Disappear, Brouwerman's painting of Nuzzi, on view at Art Basel in Miami in December. Brouwerman says the work represents the body as symbol, as myth, and as an agent of authorship, and for the subject, a sense of return. Lachlan Cartwright, California Skeeman. Cartwright, the founder of Breaker Media, spoke to more than 20 people in California, New York, and Australia for his column on the LA News Wars. Having grown up in Australia, where the editor of the California Post is from, and then moving to London at 22 and really starting my career at The Sun in London, a Murdoch paper, and then on to the New York Post, I was uniquely positioned to dig into how the California Post plans to disrupt the incumbents in Los Angeles. Ethan James Green, Mid-Century Maison. Green is a New York-based photographer whose work often explores themes of identity, sexuality, and style. He traveled to Los Angeles to photograph longtime Louis Vuitton creative director Nicolas Ghesquiere and his partner Drew Koos at their sleek mid-century modern home in West Hollywood. He previously photographed the cover of Vanity Fair's Hollywood issue in 2020 and has also published two photo books, Young New York and Bombshell. Michelle Ruiz, Dreamweaver. When Ruiz, a Vanity Fair contributing editor, visited Oscar-winning director Chloe Zhao at her home in Los Angeles, her new rescue dog, Foxy, crashed the party. Chloe is in the process of training her, and while she was supposed to be lolling on her dog bed during the interview, she was slowly but surely creeping over to get in on the conversation, Ruiz says, while tearing to shreds a lamb chop toy. Cassie David, Dear Diary. For this issue, Los Angeles-based writer David wrote about how her routine has been upended by an unexpected distraction, adorable deer outside her home. It was nice to write about the thing that had been keeping me from writing, she says. Maybe that's the only way anyone ever writes. Her second book of essays, Delusions, is out in March, and her directorial debut, I Love You Forever, is available to stream on HBO Max. Kaya Gerber slays it all. Catwalk, backlot, boardroom, bookshelf. Rebecca Ford meets a self-confident, self-aware, multi-hyphenate. Photographer and fashion editor Eli Russell Linnetz. Night Moves. Kaya Gerber photographed on August 7th in Los Angeles, wearing a bejeweled gown and holding a knight's sword. To look at Kaya Gerber is to see the past and present collide in a single face. Take, for example, a scene from the second season of her kitschy Apple TV comedy Palm Royale. Gerber is sprawled across a bed. The lighting is low, the mood moody. Her already long limbs seem to lengthen in the powder blue nightgown that floats around her. Her hair is Bardot-worthy, cascading in waves from under a baby blue headband that's tied in a neat bow. She's the very picture of mid-century Hollywood glamour, a vision of the 1960s brought to life. But even dolled up like this, Gerber wouldn't look out of place in a Pepsi commercial or a George Michael video. As the daughter of supermodel Cindy Crawford, she carries the unmistakable hallmarks of her lineage, striking bone structure, luminous eyes, that radiant camera-ready smile. Her parentage undoubtedly opened doors for Gerber in the fashion world, at least at first. She's been strutting on catwalks since she was 16 years old. At 24, she's starred in Sarah Burton's first campaign for Givenchy, working as a mango ambassador and teaming up with Vuori on Bykaya, a capsule collection inspired by her mother's retro workout style. But in moments like that Palm Royale scene, Gerber is also forging a new trail. Crawford drew crickets when she tried to launch an acting career with a 1995 flop Fair Game. Gerber, though, is an in-demand presence on screens, both large and small. What's more, she knows exactly what you're thinking when you watch her, the model beautiful daughter of history's most famous model, and she's ready to beat you to the punch. I kind of play with people's perception of me and projections onto me, says Gerber. So to play a character that mirrors that in a lot of ways, Palm Royale's Mitzi is, yes, an aspiring model. It was really a cathartic experience. And Mitzi is not the only one who's found new footing. I do see a different person this year, says Gerber's co-star Kristen Wiig. She has a self-confidence, a light inside of her that is allowing her to take chances and explore. Gerber is not just smart. She's actually a nerd, an inquisitive bookworm with endless curiosity. More on that later. Just as importantly, she's clever enough to use her famous parentage to her advantage. It's so crucial to be able to make fun of yourself, she says. I truly believe that if you can't laugh with everyone else, if you can't laugh at yourself, life will be such a challenge for you. The Nigerian-British poet Caleb Femi may have put it best, says Gerber, paraphrasing his poetry collection, The Wickedest. You either laugh or you rot. Photographer and fashion editor Eli Russell Linnetz contributed to this project. Once upon a time, Gerber dreamed of dancing on a table in leg warmers. In elementary school, she watched Fame. When asked to name her ultimate ambition, she answered, I want to go to Juilliard. But before the Malibu native could audition, she made her runway debut for Calvin Klein, wearing a black and white Western-style silk shirt with a blue turtleneck and bright yellow satin pants. Crawford, naturally, was watching from the front row. Gerber was an instant sensation. I kind of got swept up in it, she says now. In the autumn-winter 2020 season, an 18-year-old Gerber walked in 24 shows. Around the same time, an idea began to nag at her. I was like, am I peaking right now? Is this the best it's going to be? She says. I'm just becoming an adult. What am I going to do? Then COVID-19 shut everything down, an unexpected blessing for Gerber, whose packed schedule suddenly emptied out. She seized the moment, enrolling in a Brooklyn acting class that taught her essential lessons about how to sit with her own discomfort. Embarrassment is so underexplored, and we try to avoid it at all costs, she says. But I think there's so much value in accepting and exploring embarrassment. Super producer Ryan Murphy has a knack for casting famous progeny with something to prove. Billy Lord, Ella Beatty, Kim Kardashian. In 2021, he hired Gerber for her first major professional acting gig. Ruby, a butterfly knife-wielding ghost, tethered to one of American Horror Story's haunted houses. She joined Murphy again for American Horror Story Double Feature, playing a college student who's abducted and impregnated by aliens. Soon after, Gerber booked Bottoms, starring as a cheerleader who gets worked up because she's known merely for being gorgeous and popular, when she's dying for everyone to know that she's smart and super-driven as well. When I realized that there was a place for me in comedy, I was like, you better beat everyone to the punch, she says. You have to learn everything that someone might think about you or say about you and say it first. A photo shoot allows her to tell a brand story. Performing requires her to tell her own. And still, some naysayers aren't sure she's even ready to do that. While comedy comes easily to Gerber, she's occasionally been dismissed when going for darker, more complex roles. The biggest thing that I get, which is such an absurd thing to be told, and also an absurd thing to be upset about, so I'm not complaining, is that someone who looks like me would never face challenges, she says. I've gotten that feedback from people in the industry, from casting directors. She wouldn't go through something hard. I never thought you could be complimented and brushed aside at the same time. Though Gerber has a cool 9.8 million Instagram followers, she claims not to understand the public's fascination with her, least of all the paparazzi who trail her with relentless interest. It happens to be more than my career warrants, she says. I struggle a little with that. Why do people care? I am not doing that much. Perhaps they're so invested because Gerber's feed sometimes pictures her string of famous boyfriends, a list that includes Pete Davidson, Jacob Elordi, and Austin Butler. She is currently dating actor Lewis Pullman, son of Bill, and was spotted kissing him at the Venice Film Festival in September. The attention bothered Gerber when she was younger, but she's come to accept it, even if it makes dating a little bit tougher. You might be on a second date with someone, and the whole world knows, and you're like, I don't even know if I like this person yet, she says. I'm sure subconsciously it has impacted relationships. Maybe you feel like there's a little less room for mistakes. But I have made many, and will continue to make them. I hope we're at a place societally where we're not shaming women for dating, for having a love life, and for having desires. What Gerber wants most of all is a cozy corner and a brand new hardback. When her friends were devouring Harry Potter and Nancy Drew, she did a book report on Of Mice and Men. I traumatized my entire second grade class, she says. Novels have accompanied her on planes, backstage at Fashion Week, on the sets of ad campaigns, the only constant companions in the peripatetic life of a working model and actor. Musician Gracie Abrams, who's been her friend for more than a decade, says Gerber would be a dream moderator for some sort of salon, gathering people who are deep thinkers. Gerber inadvertently created that reality for herself when she and a friend, whose name, incredibly enough, happens to be Alyssa Reeder, began sharing book recommendations on social media. Their series grew into Library Science, a full-fledged book club and community for which Gerber interviews notable novelists, poets, and translators on a vast range of subjects. The enterprise has given Gerber a level of creative control and agency she wasn't getting from either modeling or acting. When someone comes up to me and they say that they found a book because of me, it's truly the greatest compliment, she says. Some of the best movie producers, I point out, also happen to be passionate, voracious readers. That idea had occurred to Gerber. The goal is to hopefully produce, and not all stories for me, she says. It's not just a vehicle for me to be on the big screen. What could producer Kaia Gerber's movies look like? Her tastes are eclectic. She grew up loving Paper Moon, as well as Fame, and has room in her heart for both Todd Solondz's social satires and The Dark Knight. Like her pal Ayo Edebiri, Gerber used to review movies on a stealth letterboxed page. But people have recently discovered that it belongs to her, so she may have to make a new, more clandestine account. I spend way more time on Letterboxd than I do on Instagram or any other form of social media, she says. I'd expected Gerber to be a little more guarded, having grown up in the public eye before getting famous on her own terms so young. Yet, somehow, she's an open book, warm, confident, and level-headed. Abrams says Gerber has always had her feet rooted on the ground. She never radiated any kind of anxiety or restlessness. She was always very centered, which I think you don't always see in young people. But while this poise comes naturally to her, she's also reached equilibrium through a lot of therapy, says Gerber, both talk and psychedelic, which she started during the pandemic, and through modeling, a vocation that forced her to develop a strong sense of self. Someone would tell me that I looked beautiful and I would feel amazing. Then someone would tell me that I didn't and I would feel terrible, she says. So I really try not to allow either in. Unlike many children of famous parents, her father, Rand Gerber, has been married to Crawford for 27 years. Gerber doesn't bristle at comparisons to them. Crawford, with whom she shared runways and shot campaigns side by side, truly is one of my heroes, she says. The more that I work and become somewhat of an adult myself, I appreciate and respect everything that she's done. Gerber is also acutely aware of the antipathy that's often aimed in the generational direction of Nepo babies. I am positive that people have problems with it, and I absolutely get it. We're all so annoying, she says. I'm sure it's also annoying to see someone who is successful at one career go into another career. For the moment, Gerber plans to continue modeling, even as she devotes herself more to acting. Right now, she's looking for roles that allow her to strip back, to go inward. At the same time, she's hoping to be offered the opposite, dumb, dumb, stupid, stupid comedies. That's where Gerber is having the most fun and getting the last laugh. Now this from Daisy Shaw Ellis. With opening photograph of luggage by Corey Olson. Baggage claim. Schlepping is an art, particularly in a Wes Anderson film. Whether trekking to prep schools or grand hotels, heading off on trains, planes, and automobiles, or escaping from camp, the director's crew of eccentric characters all travel in style. For the Darjeeling Limited, the tale of three brothers who embark on a spiritual journey across India after their father's death, the Academy Award winner worked with Marc Jacobs, then the artistic director of Louis Vuitton, to create a set of luggage, pictured here, central to the story. Anderson's brother, Eric Chase Anderson, provided the illustrations of zebras, elephants, giraffes, and more from the savannah that leap across each piece. Nearly two decades later, Pharrell Williams revived the baggage for Louis Vuitton's Spring-Summer 2026 show, its safari print serving as a touch point throughout the entire collection. For the first time, the pieces will be widely available for purchase. How's that for main character energy? Carrying the canon, luggage has played a supporting role in these Wes Anderson hits. The Royal Tenenbaums, 2001. Estranged family members return to their home with emotional and physical baggage. The Darjeeling Limited, 2007. A trio of brothers traverse India by train with their matching cases to visit their mother in a Himalayan convent. Moonrise Kingdom, 2012. A Boy Scout runs away from camp, pack and all, to meet up with his pen pal. The Grand Budapest Hotel, 2014. The concierge and junior lobby boy shepherd a variety of the eclectic mix of guest luggage through the hotel's lobby and elevators. then and now, padding around. Los Angeles is replete with landmark real estate, from triumphs of design by Richard Neutra, John Lautner, and John Elgin Wolfe, to less name-brand mega-mansions. Yet across time, movie stars, moguls, and other powers that be have all called the same power addresses home. If these hedges could talk, Lorraine Nicholson. With an illustration by Ivan Gio, which shows a map with the various houses pictured. Betty Davis slept here. Originally built in 1919 for actor Robert Armstrong, this Beverly Hills estate now has 6 bedrooms and 9 bathrooms. Then Armstrong, Davis, Edith Head, Carrie Fisher, now Billy Lord. When Neutra built the steel frame level health house in 1929, it marked a watershed moment in the architect's career. Then Philip Lovell, now Ewan and Manuela Wirth. Films like The Godfather and Chinatown were greenlit at Woodland, a Hollywood Regency-style home. Then producer Robert Evans, now president and CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery, David Zaslav. With a vaulted movie theater and separate studio, working from home could look a lot different here. Then, The Killers guitarist Dave Kooning, Grinder founder Joel Simkai, now Brad Pitt. Lautner designed the Harvey House, named for its aluminum magnate owner in 1949. Then, Leo Harvey, now actor Kelly Lynch and writer-producer Mitch Glazer. Misty Mountain is a Spanish Revival mansion with 11 bedrooms and 9 bathrooms. Then vaudeville actor Fred Niblow, MCA founder Jules Stein, Rupert Murdoch, now James Murdoch. More of a spectacle than a landmark, this mega mansion in Beverly Park features a skate park, golf course with driving range, and pool with water slides. Then Mark Wahlberg, now Paris Hilton. One of L.A.'s most famous mid-century homes, the Sheets Goldstein House, was designed by Lautner in the early 60s. Then Helen Taylor Sheets and Paul Henry Sheets, now businessman James Jimmy Goldstein. The Brown House, designed by Neutra, brings principles of modernist architecture to life. Then Tom Ford, Ryan Murphy, now recently sold. The Jack Warner estate broke a Beverly Hills real estate record when it sold for $165 million in 2020. Then Jack Warner of Warner Brothers, producer David Geffen, now Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. This Hollywood Regency-style home designed by Wolf once featured an oval-shaped pool in its courtyard. Then talent agent Sue Mengers, now lawyer Alan Grubman and realtor Deborah Grubman. Mega Mansion doesn't even begin to describe the manor, which is among the largest homes in the country. Then Aaron Spelling, Petra Eccleston, now ex-Google chief Eric Schmidt. Now we move on to wellness, hacking the system. Do you want to live forever? Vera Papasova has devised the perfect day, full of anti-aging and devoid of death. With illustrations of the various life-affirming activities by Alice Matrenier, it is a truth universally unacknowledged. A star in possession of death anxiety must be in want of an optimized body. In La La Land, dying on schedule is C-list behavior. The ultimate performance is a life that transcends age, measured not by applause or awards, but by a perfect harmony produced by the gasp of rivals when your blood work reads 10 years younger than their last role. To endure beyond the mortal frame is not vanity, but professional destiny. In this theater, what is death but bad lighting? Glamour is eternity. Eternity is glamour. When the curtain falls, let it fall on someone else. This hero's journey is not for the faint of heart, nor for the weak of jawline. Should you dare, presented below are what 24 wellness hours can look like for an ageless statue. Fair warning, some of these suggestions will expire long before a vial of salmon DNA, such as the fate of science in Hollywood. So what if it's not doing anything? Neither are diamonds, and those are forever. You could be, too. 4:23 a.m. Awaken to a hatch dawn stimulator and forest bird soundscape. 4:26 a.m. Remove dream recovery mouth tape and second wind nasal strips. 4:29 a.m. Measure and document inner ear temperature. 4:31 a.m. Brush teeth with a titanium toothbrush. 4:34 a.m. Scrape tongue with a slate electric flosser. 4:39 a.m. Sit in front of a fire wave red light therapy panel by EMR Tech while positively affirming my mitochondria. 4:42 a.m. Drink 20 ounces of alkaline water with a side of Symbiotica liquid colostrum, thorn creatinine, pre and probiotics from seed and ProMix, and 63 pills, subjectively recommended by longevity podcasters. 4:48 a.m., barefoot grounding outside to become one with the Earth's electrical charge. 5:05 a.m., review health data with my private nurse to microdose death anxiety. 5:15 a.m., draw blood sample with nurse for biomarker tracking and Eli Health cortisol test. 5:32 a.m., mobility exercises to prepare for training with Synaptech glasses to simulate my sympathetic nervous system. 6 a.m., 120 minutes HIIT training designed for a professional athlete. 8:01 a.m., film myself for TikTok lying on the floor with my eyes closed to document meditation. 8:21 a.m., strike Tibetan gong a few times. 8:24 a.m., drink $42 custom Erewhon smoothie delivered by my assistant. 8:30 a.m., Zoom call with my water sommelier to curate upcoming shipment of Svalbardi iceberg water from the North Pole. 9:09 a.m., 90 minutes hyperbaric oxygen therapy in my Atlantis chamber from HPO Tech, it's Turkish, while alternating nostril breathing set to beta frequency binaural beats. 9:23 a.m., pass out inside chamber wearing Muse headband. 10:33 a.m., wake up inside chamber. 10:34 a.m., roll my eyes back into my head repeatedly to stimulate my pineal gland. 10:39 a.m., exit chamber. 10:54 a.m., eat sun-charged blueberries from a hollowed-out geode. 10:59 a.m., daily peptide injections curated by nurse, BPC-157, even though it's not doing anything yet. 11:07 a.m., become aware of posture. 11:29 a.m., enter my Kohler and Remedy Place cold plunge tub. 11:34 a.m. exit, 11:36 a.m. infrared sauna with surround sound Sanskrit mantras, 12:03 p.m. drink 20 ounces of water filtered through volcanic glass imported from Iceland, 12:30 p.m. visit Dr. Ellie for her signature salmon DNA facial, 1:42 p.m. post selfie for Instagram while drinking more water, 2 p.m. Pure Lux Yangxingyan Scalp Spa for bespoke non-toxic deep cleansing treatment and acupoint stimulation, 3:03 p.m. get in a private car to Santa Monica and bring my nurse for a mobile glutathione and NAD plus drip, 3:16 p.m. accidentally become aware of mortality, 4 p.m. trauma sensory therapy at Reality Center using a digital psychedelic wave treatment to rapidly reset nervous system and vibrating mineral water with synchronized light and sound, 5:31 p.m. Reality Center vocal analysis, 6:02 p.m. accept the circle of life while drinking $56 custom smoothie, 6:12 p.m. ask nurse about Bufo, 6:29 p.m. decide I am toxic, 6:32 lay on my $11,900 foam roller from Remedy Place while crying, 8:31 p.m. turn on dim red lights to lower my cortisol levels ahead of sleep, 9:32 p.m. take Bio Optimizers Magnesium Thorn Theanine and Caribaldi Tart Cherry Juice, 9:34 p.m. adjust bedroom temperature, 9:37 p.m. apply mouth tape, 9:43 p.m. get in temperature controlled bed, 9:45 p.m. whisper I am immortal, and 9:46 nocturnal repose into restorative sleep. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And this is Vanity Fair, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina.